You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. In the who's who of radio, we're more of a what? Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
So glad you could join us today on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Email if you want to be a part of the show is podcast@NativeTalk.net. And you can always make comments through the Facebook page, facebook.com/NativeTalk Radio. How you doing?
Hello, everybody. That's right. Brandon is here.
Yeah, I've got my music back. Not like last week where we just kind of had to make do.
So professional.
Have you gotten life insurance since we last talked?
God bless America. Insurance, it's for everybody. No, sir, and I never will. It's a scam.
Yeah, that's why we mentioned it last week, because it's clearly not a scam. Brandon is wrong about insurance. He thinks that they're cheating everyone.
How many people out there have bought life insurance and are not dead right now? Exactly. You're all wasting your money. Everyone hearing my voice that has life insurance, you're wasting your money. You're throwing it away.
What about all the people who have life insurance and then died and their family got the payout?
Well, they can't hear this right now, so clearly they're not wrong.
Yeah, that's what life insurance is all about, Brandon.
You can't guard against the unknown, okay? Whatever is going to happen is going to happen, and you just shouldn't. If you're playing blackjack, don't buy insurance. It's just not for you. It's a scam for the casinos.
Okay. In cards, maybe, but preparing for the unknown is like the entire point of the insurance industry, and it's for everyone.
Exactly. And it's wrong. It's a scam. You can't prepare for the unknown. And most of you that are paying for it are not going to get your money back. By the time you actually die, the amount of money that you've paid into the system does not equate what you're getting out. And that's why they're a business. That's how they're able to make money.
If you file a claim, you always get more than you put into it.
If you file a claim.
That's the point of insurance. You're protecting against the unknown. And if it doesn't happen to you, good for you. But you spent the money just in case.
On nothing. You threw the money away.
But if it did happen to you, then you would get a bigger payout.
But the majority of people, it doesn't happen to them.
Yeah, because you don't know who it's going to happen to.
You don't know who's going to die in a car crash. Shouldn't buy cars, right?
No, it could be you, which is why you should have life insurance.
Oh, no. See, I don't know against the unknown. I can't protect against the unknown, so I'm just not going to drive a car because I might car crash.
Sounds like it's time for listener mail.
Scam, hey,
we can't have a full-on discussion the way we did the other night. I thought I'd give everyone just a short taste of it. All right. The email that I had last week that I forgot in Colorado, I wanted to actually read it there.
And for those that didn't listen to last week's show, maybe do a couple of seconds of setup.
Oh, okay. So last week we got this email from a woman who had depression, and she had some advice for folks who were dealing with it. And we talked a lot about depression and suicide last week. Yeah, so this was the email that prompted that. She says, hello, I am a Native woman from South Dakota who's had clinical depression for the last 25 years. I heard your podcast. Yikes. Yeah, that's a long time to have clinical depression.
I've had it for 15 years, and that's, 25, man, that's a long time.
10 more and you'll be there.
Well, yeah, but then she'll be 35 or whatever if I'm doing my math right.
So I don't think this is a race.
Race into the grave. Isn't that what depression is?
Basically. She says, I heard your podcast on suicide by guns. That was one that I did with Danelle Reed. If you want to listen to that one, it's available online, as well as all of our podcasts at nativetalk.net. So she says, I believe the only hope that we have of preventing suicide is to talk more about it and talk about it more honestly. Before every time I considered suicide and every time I attempted suicide, it was right before or right after something major and horrible happened, which caused me to be unable to sleep, unable to eat, and eventually even unable to get out of bed.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
And you understand how somebody in that condition might be thinking, what am I doing here?
What's better, you know, nothingness, you know, sweet embrace of death, or suffering with this pain day in and day out, you know, where you can't see that, you can't see the light outside the tunnel yet, you know, you're just stuck in it. Yeah, that's not a good place.
Yeah, seriously. And she says, she goes on to say, suicide, to me, felt like it was the only available solution which would allow me to end the physical pain and hopelessness that I was feeling. It's impossible to just snap out of it. You know, I give a lot of advice myself about, you know, ways to get past it and stuff. But the difference is it's not a good defense against clinical depression, because that's more than just the short term type of a deal where, you know, hey, because it, from what I understand, it's beyond just a period of time where things are bad.
Yeah, so there's a difference in feeling depressed and then having clinical depression. You know, like say you're somebody close to you dies, or even like a pet dies, and you feel horrible. Maybe it takes you days to start laughing again, or even getting outside the house again. That's a different type of depression than clinical depression, where it's like we talked about last week, it doesn't have to be something that's a big event, you know, and this letter writer, she says it was after big events that she went into the worst of it. But
yeah, but that's also, if you have clinical depression, those events can like trigger it to cause it worse. Yeah, to make it worse.
But it doesn't mean that it goes away when things are okay. When you're not suffering with those big things, it's still with you. It's just not, you know, as bad. It doesn't cripple you. But at least in my experience, you carry it around constantly, and mm-hmm. it never goes away. It's something you're always fighting.
Yeah, and that's her point. And she says, goes on to say, most importantly, you feel ashamed of what you're going through, and you can't reach out for help because you're hiding your shame from others. So you don't want to tell people all of the hard stuff you're going through. You kind of keep it inside. So it's up to others to recognize the signs and reach out to you and watch over you in order to get you the help that you need. So what she's saying is the people who are going through it, you know, they don't want to talk about this. They don't want to be a burden on other people. Isn't that what we hear all the time? They go, well, you know, everyone will be better off without me. I don't want to burden others. And so they don't even talk about it. So it's up to us to kind of look for those kinds of signs going on. So she finishes by saying, please, we must all look for the signs of depression and suicide in others, because the people most at risk are also the most likely to remain silent. So.
Yeah, it's a good point. And like I was talking about last week, you don't want to share because you kind of want, at least in my experience, you kind of want to suffer alone. You want to feel that hurt, you know, and I don't know how to explain it, but that's the best I got. But, you know, I guess for different people, different strategies work. So for other people, maybe someone talking to them is just what they need. In fact, I remember one day I was going through it really bad when I was a teenager, and I didn't understand how to control the feelings and keep going even with carrying them. But my friends, they were like, hey, let's go out and play basketball, man. It's been weeks. Let's take you outside. And I was like, no, you know, pulling my blankets closed over the curtain and making my room dark. They literally grabbed me. All four of them grabbed me from all four of my limbs and dragged me outside. And I had a good day. I went out there, and for a few hours, I got a chance to not think about what was weighing me down. And so sometimes, yeah, pulling somebody out of the depression, sometimes literally, is what they need.
You didn't deal with it by you doing one of these?
Oh, a drink? No, you can't do that legally when you're 15.
Not good
to mix that with Prozac, you responsible person.
You were on Prozac at 15?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that. All right, next, this is obviously the sound of another email. This one is from Matthew from Tempe, Arizona. All right. He has a question and a comment. Okay. So the comment is about our show last week. We talked about teepees. Let's start with that one, even though he made it his postscript.
This is when in Halloween you walk around with a roll of toilet paper and throw it over people's trees, right?
Okay. No.
Oh.
We were talking about the Plains Indians teepees last week.
Right. Native talk. Got it. Okay, I'm with you.
And there was some stuff that neither of us knew. Okay. So Matthew says teepees were warm in the winter because a small fire was built in the center, and they had flaps at the top of the teepee that they could adjust. They could open it wide or narrow to hold heat or let it go. They were cool.
I remember you did mention that too, because you said at the top flap they may do a second covering that you said sometimes they would leave open a little bit usually.
Yeah, but I didn't know they could like adjust it the way like a flue on a fireplace, you know.
So yeah, if it's or like getting on a barbecue, that little spinny thing at the top.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. So they had that on the teepees. They were cool in the summer because there was an inner liner, which was only a few feet tall, that allowed for movement of air from outside the structure and moving up the hole at the top. So basically, like, kind of like a makeshift fan is what it sounds like. All right. So
it kind of sounds to me like an antechamber. Like you walk in and you have all the, like an airlock kind of thing.
Kind of, I guess. So I guess there's like a liner and it's just a few feet tall. So think about it. The teepee is really big, right? And so they've got this liner on the inside that's just a few feet tall, and so like it would like move air from the outside and kind of push it up. According to him, creating a simple and very effective ventilation system. Cliff, sheds do not have this same ventilation system. That's why Brandon's shed gets so hot.
Well, that's.
Maybe they should install sheds with these ventilation systems, because after all, if the Native Indians way back in the old days had it, why don't they use this ancient technology on modern day sheds? That would make things a lot easier, I would think.
It sounds like I can pitch a tent with a huge tent with a hole on the top and put it around my shed, and the shed should stay more climate controlled, right?
What?
Yeah, if I get like a circus tent and cut a hole
in your shed?
Over my shed, like a huge tent around my shed.
What are you making meth like in Breaking Bad?
I can make a lot of money that way. It's one way to fill up the off season.
All right, let's finish up with his comment, all right? Or his question.
Yeah, that was a comment.
Okay. Really. Yeah, this one's the question. So from Matt, he says, this is a topic which has been bouncing around in my head, and I would really like to get your input on it. Okay. Where is the appropriate space in indigenous life, culture, and scholarship for a non-native? So for example, Matt here, he says he's not a native person. He has no hereditary connection to any Native American nation. He graduated from college with a bachelor's in American Indian Studies. So he studied it. He knows a lot of knowledge, and he's got two other bachelor's degrees. Boy, this guy's gone to school for a long time.
Yeah, that's a lot of education. Whew.
Okay. And even
overlapped or whatever.
So even though his curriculum involved reading a great deal of Indian law, seeing the world through a cultural lens very different than my own, you know, he's seeing it from a different perspective, and discussing American Indian issues, I was lucky enough to be able to help my mentor perform a small amount of research in the origin of the word Redskins, he blanks it out, for the Supreme Court case, Amanda Blackhorse versus the NFL. So he's saying, like, you can have this background of knowledge and studying and stuff, but if you're not a Native American yourself, is there a place for you in the Native life, culture, and, you know, lifestyle?
Well, and just to expand on a little bit, the woman that I learned the most native facts and culture from, she was the professor for my Native American Histories course. Okay. She was an anthropologist who's Polynesian, you know? So it's like she knew more about Native American culture than I, it would take me years to even catch up to where she's at, right? Wow.
I mean, we're okay. Both of us are Native Americans, enrolled members, and I guarantee Matthew knows a hell of a lot more than I do.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I think that's a really risky statement, Cliff. You might want to walk that back a little bit.
He knows more than me?
Come on,
that's not hard.
So anyway, I think the place that is very appropriate would be some kind of public powwow, something that, as a starting point, as a kickoff point, go there and celebrate the culture with the people that are out there doing it. When I went there, I look white, and they were very welcoming to me. Everyone was talking and explaining, and there was fry bread for everyone. It was a great time. So I think going there... Oh, it's so good, man.
Dude, I tried that. We did the election event for our tribe. Congratulations to Anna Bean for winning that election.
Woo-hoo!
As the new one, David Bean and Sylvia Miller also won. But they had a woman there who cooked legit fry bread using the kitchen that they have there at the Puyallup Native Youth Center. So that was the first time I got to try fry bread. It was all right.
Oh, flipped it. That's all right. I think that's grounds for disenrollment. I'm pretty sure.
It was really good, I gotta be honest.
Try fry bread tacos, dude. Oh my god.
Didn't have those.
But at any rate, once you meet people at a powwow, once you start talking to folks, you know, you might find people that aren't interested in speaking to you, and I believe you should just respect them and move along, because you'll find someone out there that's willing to talk to you. And you might strike up a friendship, and they might invite you to other social gatherings that are less public than a big powwow, you know?
Well, and Matthew wants to go beyond that, because he finishes the letter by saying, as a non-native, I often feel conflicted with what role I can play when it comes to working with Native communities. I have posed this question before, but it was always in an academic space, and I thought it would be an interesting topic to explore on your program. So where would you, Brandon, place the limits of non-Native involvement in Indigenous life? So beyond just going to powwows, because those are open to the public, is he able to become more and more involved with tribes and, you know, increase his you know, basically put himself in the culture, is what he's wondering. Is there a place for him?
My gut instinct says it's not fair to paint a blanket statement across every tribe that not only is each tribe going to be different, but the members within that tribe are going to react differently to these things. So I would do it more of like from a social basis to begin with, and then grow to more detailed involvement if it's welcome. If you're getting the signs that they're appreciating this, or that they want your involvement, then I think it's an appropriate place. But it's really a case by case, play it by ear thing.
I think that people, that tribes and stuff, as you become trying to get involved, I think they read your desires,
your intentions.
And, yeah, they know what you're there for. If you show up and say, "Hey guys, I just want to help." You know, who's going to turn that away? And after all, back in the old days, well, yeah, you can't please everybody. Come on. Right. Our own sister thinks that I've got no right to be doing this program.
Well, you clearly don't. I mean, look at your skin tone, right?
No, she thinks it's knowledge. I need to go get knowledgeable before I open my mouth. And I tell her that by doing this program, I learn a lot more than I ever would have if I just kept to myself, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you printed out 2 whole pages of prep work. I mean, look at you go.
I got more than that. Anyway, I don't think that there's I think you're only limited by what people allow, you know, and you've certainly got every right to try. You know, there's no limit on working with tribes, getting a job with tribes. I guarantee there are people in our tribe, the Puyallup tribe, who aren't members of any tribe anywhere. they're just regular people, but they're still working for us. They're still in our life. They're still welcome. Some people don't like that, but there's nothing against it.
And that's the thing, like you said earlier, you can't please everybody. You're going to run into that attitude of, we don't want your help. Look what you did already. You've done enough help already. Get out of here.
Okay, to that I would answer that that wasn't me. I'm here, and I'm here right now to do what I'm saying I'm doing.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is you'd be running up against a brick wall with that one. And there are people that just flat out don't want outside involvement. But you'll have other people that feel differently. So, you know, I would say respect the people that don't want the involvement and talk to the people that are welcome to it.
But also don't give up, because you never know who you're going to meet and where you're going to find the openings and the unlocked doors that you're looking for. Just because you come up against resistance doesn't mean that, you know, you should give up, you know. So keep at it, man. He finishes by saying, by the way, take care and congratulations on your new home, Brandon. So
thank you very much. I love it here. We just got back from the lake right before recording this podcast, and holy moly, there's a lot of people at the lake on a Sunday
house,
afternoon.
I'm looking at a video of your house. It looks very small.
Yeah, that's the shed, actually. It's a house outside the house. It'll look bigger when I get the tent around it.
All right, we got to take a quick break, and then we'll do a short little thing about Plains Indians. So we'll be back in just a moment here on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
This is the Puyallup Tribal Podcast, the only podcast that tackles native issues from some guy's garage. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Our house Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our house, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444.
Hey, this is Steve with thepeoplesammo.com. Do you enjoy the outdoor sportsman lifestyle? We've got the high-quality, reliable ammo you need, from home defense rounds to outdoor enjoyment. So check this out at thepeoplesammo.com, where we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all ammo is not created equal. Visit thepeoplesammo.com, where you can stock up on the quality rounds you deserve and shoot with confidence. Thepeoplesammo.com.
This is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Okay, let's be honest. If Van Gogh was alive today and he had to listen to the competition, he'd probably cut off the other ear. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. I thought I had gotten rid of all of the old liners, but I guess I missed a few.
Whoops-a-daisy.
Hey, I can't be perfect.
Right. You can only strive.
Anyway, message line, if you want to call up and drop us a line, you can anytime, 970-278-5791. Leave us a message, and we'll play it on the show here. You can also visit us online, nativetalk.net, to download and listen to any of our past shows. And, of course, like Matthew from Tempe or our unnamed native woman, you can email the show, podcast@nativetalk.net. Have you ever heard, Brandon, about counting coup? What is that?
Oh, I don't remember.
Have you heard it?
Yeah, I've heard it. It's somewhere in the knowledge banks, but I don't remember.
Okay. Well, it's a... Have you ever heard of War Games? What are War Games?
That was a movie in the 80s.
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding! Yay! Okay. What I win?
Yeah, I wasn't talking about the 80s movie War Games. I'm talking about what they are in general.
I have no idea what decade that movie came out. I'm 80s. Pretty sure it was called War Games.
It was, and it was in the 80s, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about basically doing exercises.
Like the military displays of strength, right? Where they...
There you go. Exactly.
It's not like It's not like you're loading like paint into your 9mm and shooting your comrades, right? It's the flying the planes and beaching the tanks and all that crap, right?
Yeah, it's a display of strength, all right? Yeah. And now, so back in the old Plains Indians days.
Wagging your cock around to scare your enemies, essentially.
Your chicken?
Yes.
I don't know if they had chickens back then. So anyway, in the Plains Indians area where they all lived, it may shock you to know there were more than one tribe.
You mean there's not just one tribe across America called the Native Americans?
Yeah. And even in regards to the Plains Indians, they had a number of them, and they didn't always get along. When people think about, you know, Native Americans or Indians, they think about them as like one race. But they were, while they were genetically related, they weren't always friends. And in fact, they would kill each other. But warfare developed over time into almost kind of a game, like war games. And there was an actual point system for various acts of bravery. And so if you're a young man and you want to get respect, you want to raise your social status, there were things that you could do. And warriors who received the most points would, they would get a lot of respect from their own tribe. And they would, kind of get to poke and laugh at the tribe that they got their points against. All right. So the highest point was for touching a live enemy in combat and not killing him. And the point was, I could have killed you, but I didn't. And that was the highest points. The next highest point was for touching a live enemy with a bow. So basically getting some distance between you. So if you can touch him with your hand or whatever, then that's the highest. Then you get him with a bow. And then you would get the... there was a higher point counted for spearing an enemy. Wait. There was a higher point count awarded for spearing an enemy than for killing him with an arrow. Oh, okay. So kill him with a spear,
you get more points than an arrow. That makes sense.
Okay, so it's not as good as touching him but not killing him. But hey, you can still earn points by killing your enemy, right? So this whole system was called counting coup. And warriors each kept their own count. Oh, yeah, that's when each warrior keeps his own count. There's no room for bragging and lying in this system.
Yeah. I think there's going to be some people like you who would try to change the system. But most people are probably going to be honorable about it since it is warrior status.
Well, they do say that among the warriors in the Plains Indians peoples, lying was not part of their culture. I'm going to guarantee that sometime, while it's not part of their culture, somebody at some point realized they can get some points and some respect by maybe not lying, but kind of... exaggerating a little bit. I'm sure it went on somewhere.
It doesn't surprise me that your brain went there immediately. But I would imagine you're probably not in combat alone, so there's probably witnesses and you keep track of your score, but other people saw you score.
Okay, well, look, I'm not saying that people were lying. I'm saying if you count yourself as you got six, Talking Wind over there got five, and I don't know, Bruno. Oh,
Jesus Christ, Clifton.
Bruno got nine. I might say, hey, I got 10. I don't know. Maybe it didn't happen that way. Maybe it did. I'm not sure. They do say that it wasn't part of their culture, but I don't believe
it. Of all
it.
The reasons Clifton wants a time machine, he wants to go back and find out. People lie when coming to you.
All right. So a warrior was... So the award that he got for a coup was to be able to paint his face in certain ways and wear certain feathers. Okay, so everybody knows you're a badass. And what's that?
It's like a badge of honor.
Yeah. So as you would prepare for war, you wore your war feathers and your war paint. and this told all the warriors which honors you held. So not a lot has changed through history, because in the military, people are still walking around with their medals and stuff like that. So
exactly.
It was just a different form of decoration. Now, if you had four or more coups, you were an ace. And you could then hold a position of leadership in your tribe. Because unlike, you know, the British way, a leadership was not hereditary. You had to earn the right to lead as a reward for personal achievement. I like that. I like the idea that you have to, that what matters is performance. That people who are doing well, doing good things for the tribe, those are who the leader should be.
I agree, and I kind of thought in worldwide warfare, some of the best generals out there were people that had combat experience and climbed the ranks rather than someone who got there pushing paper, you know?
No, oh, yeah, well, that's how they did it. And of course, to finish up, there were other ways to earn a coup. One way was to steal a horse from another tribe. You receive more points if you stole a horse that was tied to a teepee than if you stole a horse held in an open field, which seems awesome. Obvious to me. If you were caught trying to steal a horse, the people who you were stealing from would kill you, and that was understood. So
yeah, it's kind of like in the whole tribe, I would imagine, just shrug their shoulders and be like, well, coup failed. You know?
And in the least shocking point of this story, warriors were proud of their coups and would keep records of their achievements on the sides of their teepees. So
awesome.
Of course you want to brag about it. What good is it if you can't brag?
Well, and it's I liked it. It's a reward system for just being the most badass.
Exactly. So I like that. All right, that concludes our lesson for today. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. We hope you share the show with your friends. Just send them to our website, nativetalk.net, and like us on Facebook through facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day. See you guys next week.
Bye.
This is the nativetalk.net radio podcast. We now suck less, slightly. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.